You may find this hard to believe, but 60 songs that explain the 90s, America's favorite poorly named music podcast, is back with 30 more songs and 120 songs total. I am your host, Rob Harvilla, here to bring you more shrewd musical analysis, poignant nostalgic reveries, crude personal anecdotes, and rad special guests, all with even less restraint than usual. Join us once more on 60 Songs That Explain the 90s every Wednesday on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com, Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Welcome back to the Ringers NBA Draft Show. My name is Kevin O'Connor, and joining me, as always, but this time, we're live in person
in Las Vegas
with the Ringers, Jay Kyle, man. What's going on, man? How you doing? How you enjoying Vegas?
Oh, Kevin, I have a mixed relationship with this place. I love it. I'm amused by it, and I also can only be here for like 36 hours typically, you know? I'm staying a little longer than that this time, but basketball makes it sweeter, man. It's a good reason to be here. I'm not much of a casino guy, but I'm very much a meaningless basketball. We always say this is a fun time of the year because every fan base is just in a lighter mood. You know, it's everybody's kind of excited about their guys or really depressed. We can get to that, but or you know, feeling some FOMO or some you know, regret maybe potentially, but I love some relief.
It's a little too early to feel too much regret. I understand fans feel it. You see one game, which
quote Kevin on that. It's a little too early to feel too much regret. I love that quote.
And that's what we're going to be reacting to. It's really just one game. Sure. Because we're recording this on Saturday. We saw the opening night of games on Friday in Las Vegas at Summer League. I saw two of them. Maybe you saw far more than me. I saw the two games, the big games, the Rockets and the Blazers, and then the Spurs and the Hornets, which means the top four picks. So we're going to go through those four teams, and let's start off with the earlier game, the most exciting game of the day between the Rockets and the Blazers. We saw Portland have a 100-99 thrilling win. Jabari Smith hitting a game-winning buzzer-beater three-pointer with 0.6 on the clock, sprints down the floor afterwards. He celebrates in front of our boss, Bill Simmons. The game was awesome. The Rockets side of things, they win that game. Jabari Smith had 33 points. We see Amen Thompson. Let's talk about him first. 16 points of 6 of 13, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Amen Thompson, number 4 pick in the draft. What were your first impressions of seeing him with this young Rockets core?
He had sort of a Sean Marion-y kind of a like length of the stat sheet kind of a thing. You know, I was really impressed. A lot of things translated. You and I had this conversation over the course of the year about, like, okay, what's the pitch for Amen Thompson? The pitch is probably going to be able to get into the lane at will. Very wiggly, can change directions. He's flexible, full body flexibility. And the thing about that separates him from other guys with his athleticism is once he gets into the lane, he has a really good access to angles, passing angles.
The left-handed finish that he had on the right side of the basket is a perfect example.
He's had that one in his bag for a while, but he'll put you in this weird stretched out position. Yeah, and then he surprises you with that lefty finish. It's kind of unorthodox because he can righty finish there. I was really impressed, Kev, with he had a couple interior kind of dump offs, sprays back out to the opposite, you know, to the weak side. I think he forecasted the things that he is going to provide for them. In addition to being competitive on the defensive end, this scenario really showcased, I think, a lot of the things that are the pitch for him, and they translate it, which is encouraging.
You mentioned his competitive defense. On one hand, I was sad every time we saw Scoot and Amen matched up and then they switched the screen. On the other hand, we got to see Amen Thompson fighting like hell on those switches against bigger players. Mm-hmm. And I thought with his size, 6'7", with length, and obviously his otherworldly athleticism, the toughness more than anything else was impressive to me on some of those switches against bigger players that were screening against him. That's what he's going to have to do with Houston. You got a team that is kind of built to be super switchable. Jabari Smith, of course, they have Cam Whitmore. They have so many kind of these big wing type of players that have different playing styles, but all of them on defense, I would expect to be heavily switchable. Amen Thompson, I thought he was excellent on defense. He did everything that he had to do for that team.
Yeah, he's disruptive. I mean, like, again, the body type, he's crisscrossing sort of a lot of different. We talk a lot about like how Matisse Thybulle can, like, you know, contest out to the 3-point line, close gaps quickly with his closeouts, fly in, disrupt lobs, things like that. Slink around screens. Being difficult to screen is a really important thing because, you know, it's just a way that teams can create separation. And if you want to, you know, if you want to be switchable, I think that body type is going to be really helpful for that type, you know, that style of thing. He projects as a connector and exactly what we talked about, like a connector on offense and a guy who can switch on defense. We did get to see a couple Scoot in head-to-heads. I think Scoot made like an 18-footer step back on him, and you could kind of see Scoot being like, told you. You know, there was like a fun energy between
them. Yeah, he had a little
bit
of reaction.
Yeah,
you could tell he's feeling good about himself in that moment.
Yeah, yeah, that was a fun. I wish we'd, like you said, Scoot obviously left the game.
As did Amen.
Yeah.
Scoot with the shoulder injury. We, as of Saturday recording, we don't know with the MRI if he's, you know, what the seriousness of it is. Odds are he's going to be out. That's what I would expect. Amen Thompson as well had the ankle issue that he left the game with. So we didn't get to see those guys finish, unfortunately. But both of them kind of did all the things that we anticipated from them. I don't think we necessarily saw anything new from Amen. It was just nice to see him perform. And same thing with Scoot Henderson. He had 15 points on 5 of 13, 6 assists, 2 turnovers. He hit some pull-up jumpers to start. I believe he had his first 3, then he missed a handful after that. It was just a solid Scoot Henderson game. We've saw this for 2 years with the Ignite, and more than anything else, he just seemed like maybe the most composed pick-and-roll playmaker that I've seen in the Summer League in a long time, which is no surprise considering his actual professional experience for 2 years now.
Yeah, yeah. Tate was talking about how he looked like a seasoned veteran. I was like, he looks like that way because he is that way. He's been playing against NBA schemes for 2 years now. We talked about he was a little bit more tertiary, secondary off the ball with like Beauchamp and Hardy and Dyson Daniels, yep. And then he moves on ball in year two and it has more of the primary role, but he's been seeing these looks. He's ready. And I honestly think in terms of like the age range and the types of defenses he's seeing and just sort of the problem solving, he's familiar with it. So I think some of the acclimation that has to go on, we saw like Brandon Miller come out of the gate like the first night or, you know, the first games he was playing. It was like, it was a little wobbly. It was a little weird, you know, it was a little inefficient. But Scoot just shot out of a cannon. He was ready to go. Like, he didn't have to acclimate. He was like, hey guys, I've been here. Like, there is no adjusting. I'm ready to go out of the box, you know.
My favorite play that he made was a drive down the basket. I believe it was a right-handed loop pass from underneath the rim to Chris Murray in the corner for a 3. Murray was solid. It wasn't like, you know, a spectacular game. 10 points, hit that corner 3. Watching the game though, you know, the people I was sitting with, we were talking, there's just no way Scoot and Dame are going to be able to play together. They could play together. Like, they could coexist, right? Like, 2 smaller guards, 2 6'2 guys, but Scoot's at his best with the ball in his hands. Dame is at his best with the ball in his hands. And if the Blazers were to keep Damian Lillard into training camp, try to make this ugly, try to get the best offer that they can, I think with those two guys, like, yes, you get a mentor in Dame. He's going to do what a veteran should do. But on the court, I just don't even think it's for the best for Scoot's development. I think he'd be better off getting that freedom to kind of just run the show with all the other young talented players that they have. Like, what are your feelings on kind of Scoot? Did that cross your mind at all watching those games?
I think you can look at it in just the Scoot-Dame dynamic, but you have to zoom out and take everything else into consideration. At that point, you're going to have 4 guys that are on the floor like that you want to play a lot. You're going to start talking about not starting Sharp, not starting Anthony Simons, that type of thing. The three-headed monster of the Simons, Sharp, and Scoot thing is going to be very fun. Like, I long-term, I think it's going to interest, like, maybe pose some roster questions we can talk about. But the Scoot You know, the Scoot.
What are those roster questions?
I think that it implies, I made this argument in a video I did about Scoot. I finally got out my eval dive on Scoot.
Martin Scorsese.
I was joking. I was like, it was starting to become the Guns N' Roses album, the Chinese Democracy. I was like, this thing's finally going to come out and stink. I don't want to like people talking about it for too long.
Verno used to have a line with our podcast. He says, it's not Born to Run.
Exactly. But my thing with him is that, like, I do think the three of those guys, while fun, sometimes you'll have these young cores that in the short mm-hmm. term will be like, man, this is a blast. But long term, you do have to kind of level up and start asking different questions. I always compare it to like the company culture thing. You always have the startup, the fun times where it's like, you know, people are having beers at their desk and, you know, going and having luau's on Friday. But at some point, you got to be serious about like becoming a real entity that is trying to achieve. And, you know, so it's like for the Trailblazers, I think eventually if you wanted to, and this is me just, you know, spitballing with you here back and forth. I mean, to me, it seems like they would have to have big time switchability, big time, like mistake coverers, you know, mistake erasers on the back end. Maybe that could be Jeremy Grant. I think you'd have to have a pretty great rim protector behind those three guys if you wanted to keep them together. What do you think about that?
You're talking just simply Scoot, Simons, Sharp.
Yes. Offensively, super fun. But yeah. Defensively, I think it's going to be an issue to have three guys that size on the court. Well, yeah.
I think at some point, you know, obviously you trade Dam. At some point that happens. At some point, I also think you trade Simons. And so that would distill it down to Scoot and Sharp. And Sharp's got some size to him. Has a bit of fight on defense. We'll see how he develops over time there. Scoot Henderson, 6'2". He gets attacked. You know, you detailed it, you know, very well on your video about how sometimes he kind of just, I don't know, doesn't close out hard. He goes through phases where he's just, the effort intensity isn't there. But then you see him kind of locking in a stance against Amen Thompson, ready to go. When he locks in, he can be really tough. And as part of a collective defensive unit with a ton of versatility and a great rim protector that you're talking about, I think Scoot could fare very well on defense as part of that type of atmosphere and situation that they could be part of in the future. But for Portland, I also think your point about them having a great rim protector also applies to offense too. Like having someone who can be that downhill vertical threat would be perfect with Scoot Henderson in the years to come. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like how Russell Westbrook, granted Steven Adams isn't the most vertical guy, but he's an awesome screener, a great finisher at the basket. Scoot's downhill attacking would pair well with that type of player construct. So with them, maybe Yusuf Nurkic can kind of be like a C-minus version of that or a D-plus version of that for his first year in his career. And then in the years to come, you find an upgrade over him, which isn't hard to do. So I think for Portland, you know, I think they're in a position now where you're kind of just in the early stages. It's a question for down the line that you're talking about with the Sharp, Simon, Scoot trio. And where they are now, like, I like their young players. They're kind of developing. They have Jeremy Grant still under contract. They just re-signed him.
Yes, they do.
Chris Murray, 5-year deal. Chris Murray, solid two-way player as well. They're building out kind of the foundation at this point. Now it's just about maximizing that return for Damian Lillard, whether it's this summer, whether it's to Miami, whether it's to a surprise team, or whether it's dragging this into the season and trying to get a better offer in January or February, or even waiting until next summer. So we'll see how that kind of plays out for them. On the Houston side of things, I think what they're building as well is kind of, I mentioned earlier, all their rangy wings. That's what you're sort of envisioning for Scoot with Portland, with all the guys that they had. We saw Tari Eason have 20 points, 10 rebounds. Jabari Smith, 33 points after an iffy first half, was amazing in the second half.
Hit the game winner, yeah.
Jabari Smith's stock going up, still early to buy after, for a lot of people, thought he had an underwhelming rookie year. I thought the quote he had after the game was, I mean, it's a great mindset to have. You know, why would I not be playing summer league? I'm 20 years old. It's my second year. We stunk last season. Like, yeah, he should be playing, and he looked great. I thought his progress was pretty apparent.
I love that you mentioned the thing about his quote after the game, because that speaks to a broader thing that I think a lot about with summer league. You know, every year that we do this and come in and out of this, is that like it's just such an opportunity. Last night on Ringer NBA show, I talked about how this is the on ball leap lab. This is where guys go to develop on ball skills, and it's just such, I think it's just such a mistake to pass up on it when young guys do. And like, it was just refreshing. So I heard somebody make the comment that this could be like a sort of a foreshadow of like the culture shifting around the summer league, which I hope that it is. Like, I hope we can get away from this my player checkpoint career checkpoint thing of like, well, in year two, you got to be on the sideline in a bucket hat and your best fit cheering on your team, because that shows that you have hit the mark and you're going to get that max extension at some point or whatever it is. It's like, no, man, this is an opportunity to grow. And you're right about Jabari. Like, Jabari, that was the huge ding, like, on him. It's just, we were just like, this guy's way too upright. He's not ready to play on ball, and that, like, guys can get under him. He's not any, you know, he struggled last year. They struggled to produce open shots, point blank, full stop. And I thought it was great. Like, I thought he looked great last night, and he was really resilient. He competes on defense. He's a guy, I think it kind of poses some questions about, if you looked at how they performed, it poses some questions, and with the guys that they signed, about, like, who do you keep around? Who do you maybe parlay for something else? Is Jalen Green in that conversation? What do you think it does for him, like, in terms of, like, their schematic, in terms of what they're doing? You don't think so?
Well, why not? Why would it? I'm curious about your thoughts there. Like, why do you ask?
If Jabari's going to develop on ball, it makes you look at the pieces they have, and I'm just like, is there redundancy there? We talked about before.
I think Jalen Green is at his best in a hybrid role, though, where he's on ball and off ball. Jalen Green, his best skill probably at this moment is kind of off ball shooting, movement, cutting. He's an amazing lob threat. With Jalen Green, it's the kind of the on ball feel that's had to develop with him. So I think with, you know, Rafael Stone, that front office hiring Ime Udoka, it's going to be interesting to see how Udoka did in Boston could translate to Houston, where they had so many different sources of offense. Sometimes it's Al Horford, DHO, sometimes it's Tatum, sometimes it's Brown, like whoever it might have been in the guard, the backcourt, Marcus Smart. They ran so many different offense in the half court to generate points. With Houston, like, it was just a mess. And now I wonder if we'll see that type of thing where sometimes it's Şengün, sometimes it is Jabari Smith. It's going to be Amen Thompson a lot. Sometimes it'll be Amen Thompson as a screener, kind of playmaking out of the short role maybe. So I think with Houston, that's where I look forward to seeing Jalen Green develop in this type of offensive ecosystem, where it's coming from him sometimes, and then a lot of the other times he's playing off of somebody else. So, like, personally, I'm higher on Jalen Green in this kind of Rockets, you know, situation now with Amen Thompson there and with Jabari Smith's progress. But, like, push back against me now. Like, you seem to think that maybe Jalen Green could kind of fade a little bit in this situation.
No, not necessarily.
Now?
Not necessarily. I think it's more of a question of sometimes you get in these discussions when you're talking about moving pieces, and they'll be like, okay, it's this instead of this. It's like, no, it's just like, sometimes there's a choice that might sting a little bit if you move it, but it's gonna move you forward ultimately. You know, I don't want to use the OKC example, because they actually did the opposite of what they should have did when they had a young trio, where it was like, okay, we need to do this. Maybe more from money concerns, like, they moved Harden when they should have kept Harden, you know, that kind of a thing. But when you have a young trio, sometimes they've just accumulated so many assets. And you and I talked about before the draft, I was wondering about, like, how the stack of, like, rangy athletic guys that you were saying is to their credit, like, it's a superlative that they have all those guys. I was like, where are the minutes going to be for Cam Whitmore? Well, they got off of Kenyon Martin Jr., things like that. They're just figuring it out. Both of these teams next year are going to be really fun, I think, at times. Like, when I think about Şengün, sort of being a traffic cop, or just like a, you know, an air traffic controller with a lot of these athletes, he's the fun catalyst piece to this for me. When I think about, like, I would have loved to have seen him in this setting. Şengün, I think his passing could just kind of be more fleshed out. There are more options for him. I just think it could be more sane this year, because they added passers, they added athleticism. Both of these teams are going to be bad next year, still most likely, but in a competitive West, but they still have just a ton of questions to answer.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com. We'll be right back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So Jabari Smith hits the buzzer beater. And the crowd goes crazy.
How did that pass get to him?
I don't know.
That was like an optical illusion.
It was unbelievable. From my angle, I was kind of behind the inbounder. And I thought from my angle, like, oh, no way, I said out loud. And then he catches it, turns, hits it. It was unbelievable. I love Summer League moment. This is Summer League at its best. And then you're all standing. You're feeling good. You're like, Wemby's coming out. He's warming up. He's missing layups, missing shots and warm-ups. And you're kind of like, kind of like that workout video with the Spurs. And then the game starts. And what we witnessed was a absolutely boring Summer League game. 76-68 Spurs victory with Victor Wembanyama going out there and scoring 9 points on 1 of 7 from two-point range, 1 of 6 from three-point range. 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 blocks, very good defensively. He was a +4 in the game. But overall, Kyle, after that Jabari Smith buzzer beater, to get that Spurs Hornets game, what a bummer. It really was, right?
It was definitely a fart sound kind of an outcome compared to what we were excited about. I mean, like, the energy in the gym was really crazy. Like,
I thought it would continue throughout the game.
Also, there was a nice needle drop too. I don't know if anybody else kind of felt that. It was like when he came out, the hip hop hooray song came on and it was like perfectly timed. Not that that was like the hippest song for the moment, but it just had a cinematic thing when he came out. Everybody in the gym was like, oh, all right, like, this is exciting. And I was watching him in the first half of that game, and I was thinking, I told Justin Verrier, our editor, that I was sitting next to, I was like, he looks tired. He looked winded to me at different times. And I got thinking, I was like, if you think about like the past, it's just been a media circus for him. Like, I feel like life needs to settle down for Vic a little bit, because you think about it, he ended their season, you know, I forget, it was probably like a month ago.
A couple weeks ago, really.
The train leaves, you know, the train leaves the station fast in terms of conditioning. If you
played
if
almost 50 games, highly competitive.
Yeah.
Then he comes here flying across the world, doing all these interviews as the number one pick. He did look fatigued for sure.
Yeah. You can get conditioning can become a problem quickly in the NBA. If you think about just the pace of how quickly things turn over, he definitely looked a little bit winded. If he wasn't making shots, you know, it kind of hammers home how special what we saw in October was, the fact that he was making shots. If it's hinging on that with him, like, the offense stuff can be a little bit ugly, but I thought his passing looked good at different times. I thought he was
the downhill drive, the little interior wraparound feed.
Yeah, I mean, he hit like a little like 1-2 cross and got to the rim and did like a shovel pass to, I forget if it was Barlow or Champagne, but it was an awesome drop off. But the shooting, he kept settling, which made me think, too, that he was probably a little winded. We just didn't see him attacking his spots.
Not a lot of full court sprints and transition either. He did seem fatigued. I mean, I think with Wemby, ultimately, it was disappointing. He showed some of the warts on offense, mm-hmm. where as a rookie, he's going to have to get adjusted to defenses digging in with help, stripping at the ball when he's handling at his size. Like, it is physically a difficult thing to do, to be that size and to have the good handles that he does. They work sometimes, but for him, that'll probably have to be an adjustment in the half court, dealing with those really smart, athletic, quick defenders coming over and help. I mean, I forget how many times we saw that. 2, 3, 4 times in the game where defenders swiped at him and forced him to pick up the ball and make an awkward pass or just turn it over.
Yeah, he I think they're going to have a little more, you know, once they get into the season, I think the scheme is going to be a little bit more structured. But he's not going to be eating a full diet of dessert, of just like cooking, you know, dancing with the ball and then like that kind of stuff. Like Mets 92 was, use the word lab again, that's what it was. Like that was an open construct for him. That's why he went there, right? I mean, that's why he went there, was to work on those things and to work on his on-ball stuff. And I just think it'll be a little more structured. I don't think that we're going to be seeing that as much from him. Like you said, like him dancing with the ball, it's, yeah, he's going to be vulnerable. He's got low with his dribble a lot. He did a lot of really impressive stuff on that front.
A quick dribble too.
Yeah. Yeah. The defensive stuff I think is going to translate. I guess it's more of an over.
Right away.
I wanted to ask you, Waz posed this question. He was saying that he had some people in his life that were saying that they thought that he would be scoring an easy 15 points, like as a rookie. What's your over under on that for Wemby? You think points?
How about 17 and a half?
Okay. So you do feel like he'll get 15 pretty easy?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. It also depends on if the Spurs make any other moves. They still have $15 million in cap space. Could there be a trade that they make to, you know, take money into space with a veteran player or another young impressive player? Could they be a hero team or a maxi team, kind of in that Damian Lillard situation? So it's hard to know at this point. But at this current moment, I'd set it at 17 and a half.
Yeah.
With their offense, Devin Vassell is going to get a lot of touches. He'll probably go up to closer to 25 points per game. Keldon Johnson, Trey Jones. I mean, they have a lot of guys on that team. And I think for Victor Wembanyama, that'll also have to do with just simply three-point percentage.
Yeah.
Is he sub 30% still as an NBA rookie like he was this past season, or does that number improve further like it has every year? His free throw percentage has improved every year overseas. He's at over 80% now. He was over 40% on mid-range twos, a lot of tough pull-ups. So does that three-point percentage go up? How many does he take? Do they use him in pick and pops, or are they just like, we want to simplify the game for you, use you as a screen and roller and post up player and develop him in other ways? I don't know. I look forward to seeing the way Popovich uses him. I'm not sure what to expect. How do you think they should use him?
I was going to say on the shooting too, before I talk about how they're going to use him, I definitely think he's going to be low 30s. I just have a feeling, you know.
So that's still up, though. Low 30s is higher than sub 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm pretty good at math.
I'm saying it's, I guess that's not the best. It does make you feel a little sickly. I guess it kind of comes down to the types of threes, you know, because not every three is the same. You know, not every player can do what a movement shooter does. There's big difference. And what he's going to be allowed to do, if he's shooting like a lot of dribble pull up threes, it's going to be low 30s, if it's 30 at all. If he's just shooting pops.
So how should they use him?
I think that. I definitely think that at the end of the day, if you were going to run off it, if you were approaching it like this and you were saying like, okay, we want to build an offense around him, not necessarily like him being the thing that like moves through, I still think having him be stationary somewhere in the mid range is probably the way to go, because he's quick and long enough to take a couple strides and get to the basket. He can see over the top of defenses. We've seen him hit those fades, those Dirk kind of Durant-y kind of fades. I think the like dribbling into his offense part of it is going to have to be a lot smaller piece of the pie. Like we saw, it was fun. The highlights were really fun. It's going to be a little too erratic and inefficient.
Or grow into it over his NBA journey. And I think with him, that's a perfect game plan. Sidy Sissoko, his teammate, drafted in the second round. Defensively, he's been absolutely awesome. Nobody can get by him. Offensively, has a long way to go. Maybe we see him with the Austin Spurs. That's where Dominic Barlow, last year out of Overtime Elite, he was an undrafted free agent. Even though he put up big numbers for OTE, he was undrafted. He signs a two-way with the Spurs. He really excels in their G League system all year. He does pretty well with his opportunities in the NBA. He's been great. California Classic games, he was great. He was really good, I thought, yesterday. 6'10". You know, he's a versatile guy. He can be out on the perimeter a little bit. Tough on defense. I was very impressed by him as well. So the Spurs have a lot of good young players. And on the Hornets side of things, the Spurs look kind of like a structured team. The Hornets in the California Classic, and again on Friday, look like an absolute utter mess. And watching them is just a pain. It is summer league at its worst. And for Brandon Miller, despite all that, I feel yesterday he came out pretty impressive after, you know, some up and downs in the California Classic. Yesterday he had 16 points on 15 field goal attempts, so not the most efficient, but had some good moments. 11 rebounds, super aggressive on defense. He had to strip on Wemby. some tough, you know, rotation, some tough fight in the interior. I like the way Brandon Miller performed. It felt like a step up for him from his two prior games. Where are you at with Brandon Miller through now three games, but one game in Vegas?
Yeah, I still feel good about him. I mean,
you moved him down to three.
Yeah,
I believe you said,
it kind of became a 2A, 2B thing for me. Like Scoot did edge him out for me, especially the fit part of it. I still felt pretty strongly that the Scoot thing with LaMelo would have worked. I felt really good about that. It doesn't mean that some people, when we go into these, it has to be like you have to be, it's the Sith absolutes mentality where we're like, it's got to be this or this. It can be a few different things at once. Like both of these guys can succeed. I just think that like Miller is very aggressive. Like he was hunting his offense a lot yesterday. I'm as confident as I ever was about him, the live dribble shooting, live dribble passing and the pick and roll stuff. It looked good. Their team is probably, the way it's assembled, this summer league team is probably one of the worst possible. I mean, he's not going to have like an incredible hard rim roller that's going to catch lobs. He doesn't have a lot of like defensive support. It's a weird summer league team, like you said. Weird meaning bad. Like they looked better yesterday. I'll say that. Better than they did, which wasn't difficult to do. It was going from like horrible to not so horrible, basically. Yeah, Charlotte, they accrued a lot of talent. They're an even bigger mess, I think. Like they have more questions to answer, I think, than any of these young teams.
I think with that Charlotte team, with Brandon Miller, who's missing? Mark Williams, who was one of the best rim protectors in the second half of last season. And he helped, you know, lead them to having a top 10 defense after the All-Star break. PJ Washington, if he returns, who, great two-way player, had some high-scoring games in that second half. They're missing LaMelo Ball, their primary playmaker. They're missing even Gordon Hayward, solid veteran. Plug Brandon Miller into that type of lineup. It's going to look a lot different when he's asked to space the floor, come off screens and handoffs, run an occasional pick and roll, and play hard on defense. It'll look way different for Brandon Miller there versus now in summer league where he's, you know, bringing up the ball pretty regularly. He's playing in this half court offense where everybody's running around like chickens with their head cut off. They don't know what they're doing. Victor Wembanyama had the quote after the game, "I don't know what I'm doing." Every Hornets player can be saying the same thing right now. I feel like with Brandon Miller, I mean, maybe I'm a little bit biased here. I had him too. I've liked him all season long. But I think this Hornets situation, even for your guy, Nick Smith, like this is just, it's a mess. It's a mess. And I hope it improves over the course of this month as they're in Vegas and they get more practice time. But for these guys, like I think they're the type of team where you kind of just scratch it off and just hope you see individual moments from these guys or individual really good games over their time playing and not read into it too much. Because for them, you look at the Blazers, a ton of their guys that are going to be in their 8-9 man rotation are playing.
Yeah.
The Spurs, a good amount of their guys who could be in their 8-9 man rotation, even Barlow. I think he's got a chance. They're playing. The Hornets, I mean, it's really just Miller right now, possibly. Nick Smith may not play as a rookie.
How many real NBA players are on their summer league roster? I think that's a good question. I mean, Smith, and you talk about like, you know, this not serving Brandon Miller, this setup, the personnel, it really penalizes Nick Smith. There were a few plays, like Nick Smith is a thing that you sprinkle on top of something that works. I always said that about like Malik Monk. It's a very similar thing. If you're depending on him to be the rock that drives the thing that you have, you're going to be frustrated. Time will tell whether he's in that like Jordan Poole kind of camp or where he goes with this, but he definitely is something that is additive instead of the thing that is the construct of what you're trying to do. And that I think there were a couple, like I think there were like three or four plays in a row where they were like contested 18-foot dribble pull-ups that bricked, and I was just like, this is like James Naismith is rolling in his grave right now. This is brutal to watch. I still feel okay about him. Did you get a good look at James Naji at all, like yesterday?
Not a great look at him yesterday. He played, 12, 13 minutes, didn't play a ton off their bench, but they didn't get a great look at him. I didn't feel like from my vantage point. I mean, we saw these two games. I saw those two. Any other games that you watched yesterday, any key takeaways, or if you didn't, anything that you're really looking forward to watching today on Saturday?
I mean, we were over in Cox Pavilion watching Tate and Kyle, and I were over watching Grady Dick play. He was having a hard time getting going, was just kind of looking for his offense in places that were dead ends. I think he needs to get into more of a rhythm. Was getting a lot of foul calls, but I think the physicality and things like that he's going to have to just work on those things. I don't know. It's sort of a, that gym is always, you have to really, I think that's like the most hardcore basketball fan place in the world. Like if you sit through all those games and you're intently interested, I think that means that you are sicko status, you know, because I think any optimist can sit in Thomas Mack and watch the Stars play. I mean, I'm excited. I said this last night too. I've been enjoying watching Pajimski play for the Warriors. He's just fun. He fits what they do. He's fluid on and off ball really quickly. He's had some fun creativity moments where he had, you know, the double shot.
The one-footed three as well.
Yeah. He airballed it. I'm down for supporting the movement, but his creativity is just really fun. I wonder about him getting picked on defensively in any meaningful game, but for now, he's fun. Yeah.
I'm becoming Thompson Twins obsessed. I look forward to watching Ausar today. That will be a fun one to watch. It's unfortunate we're not going to get to see Amen and Ausar face off. We just found out that he's out for 2 to 3 weeks, which means he is out for the rest of Las Vegas Summer League. Nonetheless, Kyle, I look forward to enjoying the rest of these games. Hope you have a great rest of your day, man. Enjoy Vegas. Thank you so much to Nesson Lopez and a bunch of other people today for producing from The Ringer. And thank you for listening. Hope you have a good rest of your day. Enjoy your weekend.